I'd like to reserve my 5 minutes for the opening of the hearing. I want to focus, to start off here, on what this case is really about in practical terms. San Francisco has a very strange relationship with this, which means that tenants have essentially unilateral abilities to decide how long they're going to stay in your rental unit. That could be 30 years, it could be in perpetuity. And landlords have very few exceptions to the ability to change. One avenue that's available to them is their ability to request that a tenant voluntarily leave a unit and to offer to pay them to do so. This ordinance, this means trying to clamp down and chill the landlord's ability to exercise their speech in that manner. I'll give you an example. You could have a building with a middle-aged couple. They own four units, and one of them.
Let me ask you this, Mrs. Kunas, your point that before the landlord can ask a tenant whether he would consider moving out for consideration, the form, the disclosure form, has to be delivered to the tenant.
No, Your Honor, it's more than that. Yes, it does need to be delivered first, but it also
needs to be delivered before he. I'm not talking about the terms of negotiation. Does negotiation include inquiry as to whether the tenant is interested in negotiating?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe it does. The terms of the ordinance are very broad in their definition of buyout negotiations.
So, what it boils down to, then, if you're correct, is that the landlord can never ask the tenant, are you interested in moving out? It's only the tenant who can initiate the conversation.
I think in a very narrow set of circumstances, the landlord can walk up and say, here's this form, how will you sign it so that we can discuss the possibility of a buyout prescription. But having already provided the form, they have to get the signature right then and there before any discussion.
Well, he has to provide the form, but where is it in the regulations that he has to have the form signed before he can ask whether the tenant is interested in negotiating?
Well, I think, Your Honor, given the terms of the ordinance itself, the plain language, it says that prior to commencing buyout negotiations for a rental unit, the landlord has to provide the written disclosure, and it has to include a space for that tenant to sign a date, basically confirming.
So he has to give him the disclosure form, step one, and say, at that point, maybe you're interested in moving out. But he doesn't have to get the signature on the form then before he can start discussing negotiation, does he?
I think he does.
Where in the ordinance is it required that a tenant sign the blank form that has to be handed by the landlord before the landlord can discuss or negotiate?
Well, Your Honor, in fact, the position of the city and the district court in this case is that that's not required.
That's right. And the reason it's not the position is because it's not required.
But respectfully, I disagree. Because the ordinance says prior to commencing buyout negotiations, they're required to provide it and get the signature.
No, does it say that they have to get a signed signature before negotiation, or you have to deliver the form before negotiation?
Well, you have to deliver the form with the space for the tenant.
See, the space, and the tenant can say, I don't think you take the space, saying, I don't have my glasses, I don't know where the space is, and it's discussed with the negotiation. I'm powerful with it.
Your Honor, I think.
That's what I'm talking about, the text of the ordinance.
Yes.
We have to be talking about the text. Now, maybe it's a practical matter, your argument is, the landlord doesn't know whether the tenant wants to discuss, but can't have any proof that the tenant has received the form until the tenant signs it. But that's not what the text of the statute says, right?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure I agree with that reading, but I do want to say that.
Why don't you agree with that reading? Where in the text of the statute does it say the form must be signed before negotiations take place?
I think, Your Honor, that I don't read the word before I read this ordinance.
Yeah, you're sort of avoiding the question. It's in the answer that the text doesn't require the signature.
It says prior to commencing buyout negotiations, they have to sign a form with the line for the signature.
With the line for the signature, but there's nowhere does it say that the tenant has to sign the form before from the litigation start. Can we agree on that and go to some other point?
I'm happy to go on because, Your Honor, quite frankly, I don't know that it matters what you're thinking. You mentioned that as a practical effect, it's the same result, and I believe that it is. If I'm a landlord and I hand over the form and the tenant doesn't sign it immediately, I'm not going to take my chances of committing a violation of the ordinance in the hopes that somewhere down the line I might get them to make sure that my speech is okay under the fact.
And what's the purpose of PDR 80, which is the declaration of the landlord that attests to the notice and contains a support declaration that he did
indeed provide the notice to the tenant? Well, I think it's duplicative. I think it makes all of this requirement of the tenant on the design form sort of gratuitous. But the fact is that the failure to obtain that signature subjects the landlord to potential penalties regardless of whether he is also
filed. Doesn't this form issued by the Rent Stabilization and Arbitration Board contemplate a tenant who, for whatever reason, just doesn't sign the acknowledgement of the notice? Just in
court? I don't think so, Your Honor, because there's a...
Doesn't this protect the landlord from a subsequent claim that I didn't know, he never gave me the form, and he files it with the board, and it's like a process server. You know, maybe you can get the complaint at your feet. All he has to do is file an affidavit saying I served him in the manner prescribed by law, and that's effective notice, is it not?
Well, no, I don't think it is. I don't think
what's the purpose of the form?
It requires that you serve that form before the court, of course, and it also requires that you subject a signed form from the tenant, and the failure to do either one subjects the landlord.
Your point is that any language that in the ordinance that says you cannot even discuss the subject of land negotiations unless the tenant signs.
Well, Your Honor, as I said, I think I disagree. I believe that the language of the ordinance does say that, but even if it doesn't in any words, I think if you read the section 37.9e sub d, that is fairly clear, and I don't think that these things forms do anything to dispel the notion that it needs to be provided and signed in advance.
It makes that particular form that I directed you to kind of superfluous.
I'll agree that it's superfluous, Your Honor. We've argued, I think, in our papers that there's really no need for this requirement to get a tenant signature as a constitutional matter. It's overkill. Because you already have a mechanism for ensuring that the landlord is providing notices. But the fact is that the ordinance does require it, whether we think it's a good idea or not.
But
I don't believe it does. And the reason I don't believe it does is that what the city and the district court have said is that the ordinance allows the landlord to take actions. So a landlord can say, okay, here's the form, you don't need to sign it, let's talk. But then they take their chance that down the road, they're not going to get that signature for whatever reason, and then they're on the hook. And so then they're basically forced to take their chance to hold the dice that if they don't get that signature right in front, they may be subject to potential litigation and penalties down the road. Now, in some cases, it may be that they can kind of clean up the mess, if you will, by getting that signature right in fact, but there's no guarantee. And so it's that fact that it really creates the chilling effect. Why would a landlord take a chance to buy out negotiations when they haven't been able to obtain a signature from a tenant? It has a chilling effect on any realistic idea that they're going to go ahead and open buyout negotiations with these tenants when they can't get that signature and have the confidence that those negotiations are not going to be
violated. Doesn't
the
same risk exist in civil litigation if the defendant refuses to acknowledge or sign the signature form? Doesn't the
I'm not sure that it necessarily does because the rules of the procedure allow for multiple different ways of confirming delivery. And I
understand that this way of confirming delivery, they've created a form to the landlord signs and files with the board attesting to the delivery of the notice.
And if the ordinance allowed the LTs for not providing the notice and have a violation, then that would work. I can understand the point, but what it does is it provides the LTs for not having and keeping the signed form from the tenant. In other words, it penalizes independently each of
these tenants that inform it, and I assume we're all arguing about D10 in the ordinance.
Yes.
That the form shall include under 10, quote, a space for each tenant to sign and write the name the landlord provided the tenant with the disclosure, end quote.
Well, okay, if I could go on just a little further, it continues, a landlord shall retain a copy of the signed disclosure form for 5 years, along with the record of the deed. So if a landlord doesn't have that signed form, they're subject to penalties regardless of whether they would have separately filed.
If you prove that the tenant wouldn't sign it, but they want it negotiated.
Well, there's no defense of that in the plain text of the ordinance.
And if they were to file a declaration of service.
And again, Your Honor, the ordinance itself doesn't say you should be liable because you didn't provide notice. It says you should be liable because you did not get it and keep the signed, the form signed by the tenant. And yes, you would be liable also for not filing with the rent board, but that's a separate requirement. It's not a substitute.
Well, why doesn't the filing with the rent board protect the landlord from a subsequent claim by the tenant that you talked to me about buyouts without providing any notice?
Well, because that's not what the actual offense is. It's not that just that you talked about it, it's that you did the violations that you did not get and keep the signed form. It's not just that you talked to them and it's not that you're getting the signature. It's also that you don't have the form and you haven't maintained
the obligation to sign is each tenant must sign.
Correct.
And if the tenant doesn't sign, then the landlord doesn't have to keep the form.
Well, but then they also can't just spy on the negotiations.
Yes. If they have a videotape of handing the form to the tenant, he can prove that he did. What you're saying is that there has to be a signature by the tenant. It's the only way of showing that the form was delivered. That's not so.
That's actually, I respect it. It's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that whether or not you provided it, if you don't have the signature, that independently is a violation of the ordinance.
No, only if the tenant signed it and you don't keep it. But if the tenant refuses to sign it, you can't very well force landlord to keep a signed form which wasn't signed by the tenant.
Well, I understand that, but of course you can't have buyout negotiations and enter into an agreement because that buyout negotiation, that agreement would subject you to liability for not having a signed form.
No, because you have the patient standing there watching you and you have the forms of the tenant.
Yes.
That's just what I'm saying. Any video to you.
Your Honor, pardon me for being to question the word of the mission, of course, but the ordinance doesn't say if you have a bishop who's willing to testify.
No, it says to deliver the form.
It also says you need to obtain and keep a signed copy.
If it's signed, then you need the tenant to sign it.
But if you don't discuss with someone who is
showing you how to take your restriction, I'm not sure I understand it. Does it mean that if two or more tenants or any disabled or senior citizen is the subject of a buyout, then the apartment building is now frozen for 10 years?
That's what I'm saying. If you don't have the option of proceeding with the discretionary closing process for obtaining a condominium conversion permit.
And how is that an unconstitutional taking if it applies prospectively?
Well, I think we've argued, Your Honor, that if you have a taken person within this arbitrary, then it also be for exploitation of the claim of caution permits. Quite frankly, the that requirement or that penalty has no real logical nexus to what we're talking about here, which is a bill designed to protect tenants from harassment. And the only people who are going to be penalized by this are the people who actually went through all, jumped through all the hoops, and followed all the rules in order to protect these tenants. And the tenant still, after all, rents and pays. This is a good deal for me. I'm going to go ahead. And so we're penalizing the good guys who actually did what they were supposed to do. So it serves no purpose in terms of harassment. And in terms of the housing, that there's no reason to single out these people that have paid for a buyout and treat them somehow differently from everybody else who has those in the city. Simply because the business seems to be talking about some choice of affordability. Clearly, if the tenant thought they couldn't find some affordable alternative, they wouldn't take the deal. And now you're holding every unit that someone else can go in and rent instead. So it just, there's no logical basis whatsoever between that delta, which is clearly designed. I know the Russian basic ordinance is designed to discourage buyout negotiations. There's no logical connection between that delta and any of the purposes of the deal of this ordinance.
It's not saying that landlords are a person of class.
It's
no rational system of purpose to eliminate the ability of the landlord to condominionize because it exercises its power to negotiate a buyout.
That's exactly
correct. And isn't that a political matter?
Well, it's not, Your Honor. Under the cases that we cited, the government has to act in a rational manner. I understand that the standard is
essentially. Well, the rationale is to make a buyout more difficult. They want to protect tenants against even a negotiated buyout by saying to the landlord, if you do that and it's legal, you're not going to be able to condominiumize for the next 10 years. So it's an impediment to the exercise of property rights, no question.
Well, it's essentially a ban on
condominiums.
Well, but only on a certain category of condominiums. All the other landlords in the city still have the same options. It's only the ones who would enter into a bilateral negotiated agreement, voluntary agreement.
And you agree the whole purpose of that is just intimidate landlords from using their buyout negotiations.
I absolutely agree with that.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think that there's any rational public policy justification for it.
Well, the public policy is to intimidate landlords so they won't commit to tenants in the market. The tenants are politically protected class.
Well,
in San Francisco.
Well, of course, in San Francisco, they are.
Let me ask you something else. Concerned with the idea that the declaration will show the price a landlord paid must be filed, so it shows what the landlord was willing to pay for a buyout to the world. Right? You claim that information is private, and the California Constitution protects that from disclosure. And you say that's undoubtedly so. Pardon me to say that. Have doubt, and I want to know what basis you say that it's undoubtedly so. This private pricing information, which I consider very valuable from the point of view of the landlord, because other tenants will know what he's willing to pay and you know the inside price, right? What is the authority for saying that that's a violation of privacy?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the cases we've seen with the Agent and Associates and the Wolski case both stand for the proposition that private business really goes.
Just let me ask you about Agent and Associates. Is that a situation where pricing information was made public?
It was not specifically pricing.
The general language, improper use of information properly obtained for a specific purpose. For example, the use of it for another purpose with disclosure. It doesn't have a factual resemblance in this case, does it?
Well, it's still private financial information of the landlord.
What financial information was involved in these new associations?
The accusation there was that the landlord had not paid his equipment water bill in a timely fashion. And that the city manager, who it's a city water system, the city manager went out and broadcast that to the world, and I believe said that, you know, that they were going to initiate some sort of penalty phase, and it drove down the value of the property when they returned. So it wasn't that having the information, the government having the information, was improper in that case. It was that they then turned around and made a public statement to everyone else, and that's our contention here. It's one thing to require the filing of this information and everyone else's information to provide, but for them then to turn around and take the entire contract of everything, it's not just the price, it's everything that could have possibly been negotiated, and put it on a website, so the entire world can track it down. We believe that that's an improper use of the information that was made properly obtained.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Jeremy Goldman from the Federal City and County of San Francisco. I will just say one thing quickly about the signature requirement that was being discussed. My opponent says that the city is saying to landlords, take your chances. That is not what we are saying. We are saying that the landlord is not taking any chance because there is no requirement that the tenant sign the form before the landlord engage with buyout negotiations. They point to the risk that a tenant will sue the landlord for failing to comply with the obligation to retain a signed form for 5 years. And again, that's a retention obligation. It's not an obligation to obtain a signature. If you look at the form from the rent board, it's the instruction to the tenant, you must sign this form. The only obligation on the landlord is to retain it. But there's a sign. Correct. There's a max in the law. The person cannot take advantage of their own wrong. So a tenant obviously could not refuse to sign the form and then turn around and sue the landlord for failing to retain a signed form that the tenant refused to provide. That is just not a reasonable interpretation of the statute, and the landlord is not taking any risk. But by proceeding with buyout negotiations, if they provided the disclosure and the tenant refuses to sign.
It's your position then that the landlord can tender a form to the tenant, the tenant refuses to sign, and then the landlord can proceed with buyout negotiations, and at that point the landlord does not have to retain the form because the tenant didn't sign it.
The landlord cannot retain a signed form if the tenant didn't sign it.
So the landlord at that point has no obligation to retain either a copy of the form that had been tendered.
The landlord has to retain a record of the date the landlord provided the form,
which is the form that I brought to Mr. Skinner's attention.
There is that form. There's nothing to prevent the landlord from making his or her own personal record of it. It could be the cell phone video. It could be a notation on the disclosure form. I gave this on this day.
Do you answer the questions about what is the legitimate government interest in imposing a 10-year condominiumizing because the landlord has properly negotiated a move-out?
What the city is doing is removing an economic incentive. We're limiting an economic incentive for a landlord to engage, to enter into that transaction in the first place. It's using its power, its police power, to regulate condominium conversions. To say, if you do a buyout in this circumstance,
your apartment is worthless.
You're not going to be able to convert it.
Right.
You're still going to be able to register.
So what you're doing is damaging the value of the apartment.
You're not damaging the value of the apartment because there's no right to engage in a condominium conversion. It's a lottery. There's no guarantee you'll be able to do it anyway.
What they're doing is removing the opportunity. Right. The opportunity to engage in condominium because a landlord has properly negotiated to move out with a tenant. And the reason they're doing that is to disincentivize landlords from using move out. Is that correct?
Because it removes one incentive to do that transaction because in the city's judgment.
But what's the legitimate governmental purpose to removing a portion of the value of the landlord's property.
The legitimate purpose is to protect the categories of tenants to which it applies. And so your tenants, seriously ill tenants, disabled tenants.
So you're taking a value, a portion of the property value of the landlord, and saying that we're transferring that to the tenants, but it's not taking it, right?
No value is being transferred to the tenants. No value is being taken away from the
The incentive benefits, the disincentive benefits the tenant. Because the landlord is not going to use the move out negotiation if indeed he won't be able to condominiumize or enter the lottery to condominiumize for 10 years. That's sort of a lien on the property, isn't it? I mean, it's a cloud on the property.
Many things the government does encourages some financial transactions, discourages other transactions. That's the nature of government regulation, and it can do that to advance legitimate policy objectives. It is a legitimate policy objective to protect vulnerable tenants. The three categories of tenants. In those cases, the reason is that that's going to have a greater impact on affordable housing. It's not just a one-off. It's not protecting other vulnerable tenants in the same apartment building. It's advancing the city's interest in making more apartments available. It's an interest in maintaining affordable housing. So, because what you're doing,
I don't know if it's affordable. I don't understand the intricacies of your rent control law, but my understanding is that once the landlord negotiates and the tenant departs, when the prospective tenant looks at the apartment, the landlord can quote a higher rental rate based on today's market values than the prior tenant was paying. Before he moved out. Is that right?
Yes, and that's exactly.
So how does that protect low-income housing for deserving people who can't afford to pay a higher rent?
Because it takes that unit, which is at a certain rent control rate, and now subjects it to a much higher market rate. So you had a tenant.
So this ordinance, as Judge Bay was suggesting, if two or more tenants have moved out, it lowers the value of the apartment so the landlord can't obtain even market rates for the apartment because the value has been lowered. Is that the effect?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I think the way that every point you do a buyout it has an impact on the affordability of available housing because that same unit is now going to be charged rent at the market rate, which is higher than the existing rent.
Or you're making the whole property off the rental market, right?
That's
right. It's to convert it to condos and sell them.
Or just to sell them.
And I understand that there would actually be fewer spaces available. But what I'm having a hard time understanding is why this doesn't amount to some kind of a taking, because it produces a diminution in the value that the landlord can realize both from future rents and also if he ever wanted to sell the building as an apartment building. As Judge Bay suggested, it operates as a cloud in the time. that's the only reason the landlord wants to live there, I suppose. Anytime a buyout happens, you're either increasing the rent that's going to be passed to another apartment, or you're taking it out of the rental market altogether. If you limit condominium conversions for 10 years, you're removing that incentive to do the buyout in the first place, and so that buyout will not occur. So it will not have the effect of either subjecting it to market rents or taking it out of the rental market altogether. So that serves the city's interest.
So if you make any of the rental market ordinance is essentially to freeze the status quo to as people to continue living in apartment buildings at below market rates, by removing any extra incentive or indeed eligibility on the part of the landlord to do anything other than continue renting the apartment at whatever rate he's currently getting.
No, it does not remove the landlord's ability to do a buyout. It doesn't freeze anything, and it removes one economic incentive. There may be any number of economic reasons. It could be you want to charge market rent, it could be you want to sell the property, it could be you want to do a condominium conversion, and so on, or something else, but it soon takes one thing, it puts a limit on condominium for 10 years. But that's not a freeze, that's not prohibiting the landlord from doing a buyout, it's not forcing the landlord to continue renting the property, the landlord can take it off the market.
Okay. I guess I don't understand what the economic incentive is now. So the landlord is buying up the existence of this ordinance. You said that you severely limited the owner's ability to do anything with the property other than maintain the status quo.
I don't think that's true, and maybe I'm not understanding your concern. The landlord, it doesn't restrict the landlord's ability to sell the property. The landlord can do that. It doesn't restrict the landlord's.
Isn't the value of the property, as Judge Fredo was suggesting in his questions, lessened because the property is subject to this ordinance? So if the owner wants to maximize his financial return by the sale of the property, it essentially dampens the sale value, the fair market value of the property, because of the ordinance's cloud on the value of the property. It limits the right of the purchaser of the property who might be interested in buying it from the purchaser's ability to do much with the property, other than continue to operate it at the status quo.
There is no money to participate in any condominium conversion lottery. The city doesn't have to allow condominium conversions at all. And the only question is whether it is doing it in an arbitrary way. And it's not doing it in an arbitrary way because, for two reasons, for certain the categories of tenants, these are people who may have special hurdles for finding a place in housing.
I'm totally with you with regard to the disabled, the ill, and the seniors. I'm having a really difficult time assuming that that's true with regard to two or more conversions not involving what I'll call special tenants.
Two or more conversions have a greater impact on the availability of affordable rental housing
did not say that every single piece of financial information is constitutionally protected. It was referred to financial information that discloses other information about the person, credit card statements, banking records. And I think when you're talking about financial status, the solvency of the corporation, the management of the property,
the
agent.
The fact that the landlord paid a high price for a move-out indicates that he's wealthy.
Not necessarily.
Well, it's circumstantial evidence.
I don't think that's correct because.
And then therefore, he may be a bargain for the next tenant who has some more money for the move-out.
Landlords can often afford to pay lottery buyouts because they can recapture so much of that value by re-renting the unit at market rent. It doesn't mean that they are simply wealthy. The reason that many of these buyouts are high is because the landlord is able to gain so much extra value either by selling the unit or re-renting it at market rent. We haven't discussed the commercial speech argument, and I think it's clear that the buyout negotiations are commercial speech. Which is very thorough on that issue, so this is part of the discussion. Thank you very much.
I want to address what was talked about a fair amount of this time, which is this idea that somehow these tenants are being protected and affordability is being protected by this condominium conversion law. The simple fact is that to the extent we're talking about even the old disabled tenants who are being or parties to a buyout negotiation, what we're talking about are people who are being given all sorts of procedural protections to make sure that it's not coerced, that it's voluntary, who are being paid a lot of money to leave, and who have made the decision that they're on their own, that it's a worthwhile thing for them. Nobody's forcing them out. And so we're not protecting those people by then 7, 8, 9 years down the line saying, oh, by the way, landlord, you engaged in this negotiation, now you can't come to any of us. And so, that gets to the question of affordability. And quite frankly, by doing this and discouraging buyout negotiations, the only person you're making it affordable for is the existing tenant. You're certainly not increasing affordability for the future tenants because that's the content now with an increase in rent. And so the current tenant is certainly more affordable for them under rent control, but they, again, have made the calculated decision that it's more valuable to them to take the buyout negotiation and leave than to stay.
The 10-year suspension gives the tenant leverage to negotiate up the price of buyout.
I'm not sure how that would necessarily be the case. In fact, it might be exactly the opposite, which is now I, as a landlord, now have the option of using my property the way I want to pay less, because I have fewer options for what I can do with that property once I'm moved.
So you think that the 10-year moratorium is irrational?
I do, and the last point I was going to make is, to the extent that the city is concerned about condominiumizing generally, taking the rental units off the market, there's no rational purpose for singling out just this small subcategory of landlords and saying, everyone else, you can keep doing it, you can keep going it through the normal process. You guys, because you negotiated with your tenants, you get stuck with a special rule that's been approved so that you can keep doing it. It has no connection, this particular prohibition on the broader publication of what condominiums, generally speaking, might not be an issue. And so, yes, we contend that it is an irrational penalty on these landlords for exercising their basic rights. I want to address also, if I have just another minute, because we didn't talk about the formation of commercial speech. I think Baba and Morrison both stand for the proposition that this is not a traditional commercial speech case. Morrison specifically called out the fact that traditional
commercial speech cases all arise in the context of sort of a faceless vendor or a customer, and you have your economic interaction and then you're done. That's not what's going on here. You're talking about people, especially in San Francisco, who are essentially wedded for 30 years in some cases. This is a very, very personal, complex relationship. It's not like a traditional commercial interaction. And that's exactly what Obama said. That's exactly what Carson said. But this is a unique circumstance. And so, the plaintiffs obviously are actually the city, obviously, is more sheltered public here to avoid Obama and Carson. But those courts have recognized that the traditional commercial speech framework really doesn't fit here. You're talking about people who maybe even live in the same buildings and who we have to deal with over the course of many years under compulsion of Obama.
Thank you very much. Jason, sorry you're submitted and we're adjourned.